Well, we talked about it. We wanted to do it. There have been many reasons why we couldn't, but now finally we can. I welcome to the program a good friend and somebody that I've covered the Grizzlies with for a long time and somebody who's now kind of embarking on something a little bit new. He's Chris Harrington, formerly of the Memphis Flyer, now formerly of the Commercial Appeal. Now he is doing a little fun, I don't even know, blog spot stuff while you're in between gigs, just throwing some up for the fans, just for everyone to enjoy during the draft, but soon enough, on to something new. So I first of all, thank you for making time to talk to me and talk to all of our listeners on the pod. And before you get too crazy into stuff, just kind of, if you can walk people through, like, what's happened, because everyone is kind of, you know, everyone in the Grizzlies community certainly is kind of like, what in, this is right. quite a shock.
So it's sort of funny that I've now posted one, and I'll probably do a few more Grizzlies things on this little personal blog I have, which was never my intent with that blog. That's really sort of a hobby thing I did, because I don't really, I used to be a music critic and film critic as like a real job, and that's not really for the most part what I do anymore. So I started this little blog, which I sporadically put things up, not even caring if people read it, just more of like a personal hobby thing. My goal is to re-listen to the last 50 years of music 1 year at a time, and then I do lists, right?
That's
so
awesome.
I do a list of, like, I'll pick a random year, I do my 25 favorite albums, 40 favorite singles, and I'll do a movies list on it too. That's a total hobby thing, but since I'm between gigs, I'm using that just when I feel like I have to get out there, you know? And so basically what's going on is I left the CA, as a couple other staffers have, Jeff Calkins also in the sports realm and Jennifer Biggs in the food realm. And I think it's pretty clear at this point we're all going together to a new thing. That new thing has not been announced specifically what it is, and thus a launch date has not been announced. It's the thing itself has not been announced.
Right.
But I will reappear in Memphis media later in the summer. I will be doing a lot of similar things that I've done at the Commercial Appeal in different formats and in different frequencies. So I'll still be writing about the Grizzlies. It may not take the form of a 4,000-word weekly column. It may take a different format. But I'll still be writing about the Grizzlies, and I'll still be writing about Memphis civic issues and hopefully doing some podcasts and other stuff. And so, you know, it's going to be – I can say it'll be a locally owned digital Memphis enterprise, and I'm excited to be involved in building something.
So this is the thing. Like, when this happened – you know, I, not to get too deep into the specifics of stuff that you probably can't talk about, but did you guys, you know, initiate? Were you looking for something different? Did you kind of say, okay, this thing is, we're a little...
I can only speak for myself, but no, I wasn't necessarily looking for it. It was funny because, honestly, since Gannett has come in and, you know, you had those, we had the big layoffs and a lot of stuff. A lot of functions got moved to Nashville and even to parts beyond places beyond Nashville. And since that time, it's been sort of a common, so like, what are, you know, it's just assumed that everyone's looking to get out, right? For me, that was not the case because I'm not nomadic. I am in Memphis. If I ever leave Memphis, it will be because of my wife's job, not mine. And so right. I knew I was going to be in Memphis unless something pulled me out. I was not in a position to look for jobs outside the city. And I want to write. Like, I think most people in this business have reached sort of the conclusion of younger people that there may come a point where you have to do something else just because the way the industry is going. But my goal was to write it. My goal is to write it out as long as I can because I want to write. That's what I like to do. And so I want to be in Memphis and I want to write. And there aren't that many places to do that, right? And Commercial Appeal, for all its faults, seemed like the best place to do that. And so my attitude was, I'm just going to keep doing this till someone doesn't let me anymore. But then something else came up, and a new, you know, I was always open to new opportunities if they were to come up, and one came up, and I got comfortable with it, and there we are.
So it is tricky, and we'll talk Grizzlies here in a second, but, you know, it's like we all sort of travel in the same circles. Everyone kind of knows, you know, each other. We've all worked together in various forms. You know, I'm on again, off again with the CA, and I write, you know, in freelance for them, and so you've written, I mean, you were the Flyer, and you know, our buddy Kevin Leip, so the Flyer. So everyone's kind of mixed in here together. But I think the gist of it, the good news for everybody listening is that, you know, what's locally and what's good for the local market and what's good for all of us is more people getting more voices, more opportunities, more examples, more space to do their thing, whatever their thing happens right. to be. You have a very distinct style. You know, I have a different style. Lipe has a different style. Everyone's got their... And as long as right. there are good formats and places to actually do that, I think that it's better for everybody to have those opportunities.
Yeah, no, I mean, I want as much viable media as we can get. I mean, there's a question to how much viable media a city can
support, I guess, support. Is right, yeah.
And so, like, when the time
comes... I like to push that limit as far as we can push
it. Well, when the time comes, I will be a very strong advocate for the thing I'm involved in, because I believe in it personally very strongly. I will not be an advocate against other things, but I'm going to be an advocate for sure. the thing I'm doing very much so.
Well, I mean, that's the way it should be. I mean, everyone, right. you would hope, ideally... In the world, you get to do something that you love to do for an organization that you love to do it for. Those are things that don't always happen. So
right.
if that comes along, then I understand you grab it with both hands and you take advantage of it. So with that being said, now you're in the kind of the interregnum here, and we're...
Yeah, it's sort of bad timing from a Grizzlies perspective because... You know, it just so happened that there was going to have to be a down period because this is a new thing. It's not moving over to a thing that currently exists. And so a down period was just good. It's sort of – it's unavoidable. But it just happens to coincide during, to me, one of the best period for Grizzlies talk, writing, coverage from my standpoint. And I think we have sort of similar – we have different styles, but we're similar in a lot of ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
The two best times for me are the playoffs and the off season. In terms of where I feel like I'm the most purposeful and the most valuable, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I love the draft and I love free agency and I love all the team building stuff in the off season. And I think when you have a high pick and there's something going on, the interest tends to be very high in that time period. And so I'm going to be dormant. You know, as an official writer, I will be dormant through this entire Grizzlies off season. I'll still be on the radio every day with Jeff Calkins when I'm in town. And I'm just going to have to find a way to write some stuff, which I'm doing on this personal blog. But as an official... You know, writer in the city, I will sort of be dormant during this period.
Well, I'm gonna lean on you some here on the podcast side of things, and then you know, you're right that this is more fun, and I think I've written that.
I mean,
it's going to be.
I mean, some people are very much about the day to day and the games and the players
right.
and that sort of. And then some people are more interested in sort of the off season stuff. And I think we're both people who are interested in thinking about all the team building stuff that goes on.
You have different thought exercises, different things you can, you know, put out there, ideas, permutations, things
right.
that go this way and that way. You know, all that stuff is fun. And I think also when the team was the grit and grind era kind of first became a thing, and you could see this team start to emerge as a really talented group that was going to win a lot of games. I think it was fun to do the day to day and to see them kind of grow and to have certain things that have happened.
Right.
And the first time they, you know, this group won 50 games, the first time they won a playoff series, the first time, all these things are really neat, but you know, it's been 7 years. It was a 7-year run of a similar core. You've kind of milked every angle you can milk from that standpoint. This to me feels like the start, potentially, if they get it right, of whatever the new chapter will be, which
well,
to me is an incredibly exciting thing.
I think the road ahead is pretty rocky in the short term, but I do think that this draft pick, whether they exercise it at 4 or however they use this asset, this asset should be, and we'll probably get into this. I have some concerns, but this asset should be used to plant the first. I like Dylan Brooks fine, but this asset should be used to plant the first real cornerstone of the next Grizzlies.
It has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be. And that's, you know, I think the pressure is really on. And it's interesting to kind of look at it like a book, like bookends. Of, you know, Chris Wallace, his first pick a week after he's hired is the 4th pick. It's Mike Conley.
Right.
That turned out to be a very important one for the franchise, even if it didn't look that way for quite some time. This is now the 4th pick. Could be, if he gets it wrong.
They really dodged that Ramon Sessions, Joe Alexander bullet, didn't they?
It was barely, and barely dodged it. If Marc Gasol hadn't, like, you know, basically stood and be like, don't, this is stupid. What the hell are you doing?
Right.
This could be the other end of the bookend if he gets it wrong at 4 again, 11 years later.
Yeah.
But in between, Chris, why is it that this team has had such relative success in the second round / undrafted / scouring the edges of normal effective drafting, but has you've seen guy after guy come through? Of the 5 guys they've picked, the last 5 guys they picked in the first round, I think two of them are playing NBA basketball right now.
Well, I mean, on one hand, I haven't made a list, but I think there are more. They've had more shots to take outside the first round in terms of second round and the undrafteds, you know, the Wayne Seldon, Shamaka Greens, or whatever. So they've had more shots at the board. You know, it's hard to say. Because you have different reasons, right? The Jordan Adams thing, and maybe that would have been a bad pick, but I've given them a pass on that because he screwed up his knee, and. And I feel like based on what I saw, he may have been a good player. And also, I was never as enamored with Rodney Hood as the rest of Memphis was. And I think we've seen in these playoffs that Hood's just not that good.
Yeah, he's not that guy. There's something there. There's something holding him back.
Really, to me, the record is not good, but really it's primarily about the Thabeat thing. And the Thabeat and the Mayo. Your two shots in the top five that you blew both of them. Because if you go back and look at the other stuff – Wade Baldwin was probably a bad pick. They probably gave up on him too early. But look at who went after him. Like, it's just a string of misses in the first round for the most part after him. But when they picked Jarrell Martin at that point, like, all the guys I wanted were off the board. And there hasn't been a lot of success after. The guy people wanted was R.J. Hunter, right?
Right.
And so when you get outside the lottery, and particularly when you get into the late first round, second round, the misses outweigh the hits by a dramatic level. And so if you talk about first round versus second round undrafted, if you made it lottery or top 10 versus the rest and looked at it that way, then I think you see the hit rate collectively outside the top 10 for the Grizzlies has been fairly normal. Like I wrote a column earlier this summer where, or maybe it was back during the season, in terms of finding stars, I looked over 20 years of draft history, and you had a 40% chance in the top five. If you dropped it down to the top 10, it was a 30% chance. Outside the top 10, like 11 through 60, you're talking about like a 4% chance, a 3% chance, whatever. So I think the real drop-off in expectation is not first round to second round. It's really outside the top 10, outside the lottery. To me, there's not that much of a difference between the late first rounders and the second rounders in terms of an expectation of hitting on the pick. So if you separate that to the lottery picks they've had, which have been only a few, and then everything else, their success rate in totality on everything else is not that bad. It's that they missed on the lot. They missed on the beat. They missed on the Mayo thing, and then they missed on later in the lottery.
Xavier Henry is a big miss.
So you go 0-for-3 on your three chances in the lottery. That's really where the problem is.
Well, and the other thing that I would say, because I think there's a lot of truth to that. You don't get very many big swings like they get this year,
right.
You know, especially with a team that theoretically could jump back and be successful. You have a core that's potentially good. You don't get a lot of that. So if you take advantage of it, great. But this goes back to the question that I've asked myself, and I think it's the vital one for the Grizzlies. Is it about simply, is it like predetermined, like predestination in a religious sense? Are these guys destined to be who they were,
matter
where they were picked and by whom?
This is the right question to ask. We look back on draft history in terms of hits and misses in the draft.
Right.
And a lot of the time, it's really about what you do when you get the player. And it's really hard to suss out what was what, right? Like, I don't know what Wade Waldman's going to be. But, like, he finally, you know, he had the wrist injury, and he finally got healed. He got himself back up to Portland, and he looked pretty good a little bit for Portland, right?
Played in playoffs, was okay. Like, he did all right.
I'd rather have him today than Mario Chalmers.
No question.
You know? And so I don't know what he's going to be, right, or what he would have been if he had been drafted by someone else. And so this history goes back pretty far. I mean, they gave up early on Damari Carroll. He looked bad as a rookie, and they just pulled the plug. Right?
They had no idea what to do with him. They picked him, and just, they were just like, well, I don't really know what we should do. Yeah. They didn't have any vision for what
they
saw him to be.
He was basically a throw-in, right? They pulled the plug on him, and he ended up being a good player somewhere else. They traded low on Kyle Lowry.
And that was the year, by the way, that they sold. In the year after that, they sell a first-round pick altogether. 25th pick, they sell it to Dallas, which is inexcusable from a franchise standpoint.
That's like the worst move ever, because there was literally no reason to do that. And so I think they have... Did they have a bad draft history, or did they have a bad development history? And it's really hard to distinguish between those two things. I think on the higher picks, they made a mistake on the drafting. Thabeat was the wrong pick, period.
Would have been the wrong pick for anybody.
Right. They overvalued what O.J. Mayo was. Now, O.J. Mayo ended up having some problems beyond his physical skill set that you couldn't necessarily have assumed. But I think it was pretty clear, even in his great rookie year, that there was sort of a ceiling on what he was based on his talent.
Right.
With the Henry thing, I mean, he had the knee problems. Who knows what he would have been otherwise? But I think based on what we saw, he was never going to be more than a role player. And so I think within the lottery, they missed on the draft picks on those three picks. You get outside the lottery, it's hard to say how much they missed on the picks and how much they haven't developed the guys to their maximum potential. I mean, they spent a lot of time playing Jarrell Martin at small forward. He's not a small forward, right?
No. This is the thing is I think when I talk about the draft, I want teams to pick with intent.
Yep.
So I don't want you to just take a flail at a guy that has great measurables or that you think potentially has some whatever.
Well, this is why I don't dismiss the need thing. It's popular to say you just take the best player. You don't. You have to have a mechanism to develop the player.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, I think outside of a certain point, I think at the top of the draft, I'm best player available all day long. Right. But once you get past, wherever you pick a point,
you're making
15,
marginal distinctions between players and like. Can this guy, does he have a path to playing time and development with you versus the other?
Exactly.
And that's going to have a lot to
do with
the outcome.
I mean, Rudy Gobert is taken at 27 by the Jazz, but they had a clear idea of how they wanted to develop, what they wanted to do with him. And sure enough, here he comes, and he's fantastic. If he had been taken by a team like, for example, when the Grizzlies took the beat, and they happen to have four other seven-footers on their roster at the same time, again, not only is he a bad pick, but he's a bad development pick because you don't even have a spot to use him at
point. This applies to, like, the 32 pick the Grizzlies have this year. Let's say, for the sake of argument, like they consider Chimezie Metu the best player on the board at 32, but he's only, they won't, but let's, for the sake of argument, I was trying to think of a big in that range, that they consider him
my
the
man
best,
Jonte Porter, that's my guy, I love Jonte.
Let's say there's some center they consider the best player on their board, but only slightly better than a wing they have after that. Well, are you going to bring in another big man at 32 who you may think is the best player on the board in this draft, but you don't necessarily think is better than Deontay Davis and Ivan Rabb? And what's going to happen to that player? They're just going to sit there and wilt, right? And so that's why I think you have to, what you do with the player when you get them at a certain spot, particularly outside the top five, top 10, is as important and maybe more important than the decision you make on the
board.
Well,
and that's why I've always said, and that's why I've always said, like, people say, wow, the Spurs have such great success outside the lottery and these other teams, but they have this idea, they have intent. They pick a guy that they have a very specific set of criteria that they look for, and they have patience. And
you
they
have to know when to have patience and know when to pull the plug, and the Grizzlies haven't been good on that decision.
But because I think, Chris, my issue with the Grizzlies has always been to develop an idea and an ethos across the organization of what you look for so that when a prospect comes along that has that, you say, boom, I'm going to get him, and we may take a while, but we know based on what we look for and what we believe in that this guy is going to be our guy at some point. And maybe that means in the case of they got a guy Miljutinov who's overplaying, he's been overseas for 3 years, eventually he's going to come over and be good. Kyle Anderson has been kind of a 6th, 7th, 8th guy for them for a long time, but that's what they envision, that's what they want, a playmaker that can come in, be big, be long and be potentially switchable and cover bigs on that second unit. Well, that's what they draft him for, and that's what he's doing. There was intent. I feel like the Grizzlies, whether it's because of a muddled front office or because of change in coaching or whatever, they've failed to have intent with these picks, and it's cost them.
No, I agree. They've got a real problem with their draft history, their development history. And part of it is sort of, and this will get back to sort of the core of the decisions they're facing, sort of knowing what you're trying to do as a franchise, right? They're clinging so hard to we're going to be back in the playoffs next season, and maybe they will, maybe they won't, but they're clinging so hard to that, at least publicly, that I worry that's going to impact their decision-making too much.
Agreed. I think that's the worry is, to me, I've felt it, and this will bring me to one thing I want to talk about with you specifically is, if you had to grade, or you had to rank, let's say, the likelihood of outcome, what happens with that fourth pick? And the choices are, they just take the pick, move up, move down, or move out for a quote-unquote star player.
Right.
How do you rank the likelihood of the outcome?
I don't think they have the assets to move up.
I would agree
when
with
I say
that,
move
yeah.
up, I mean get to one or two.
Right.
In theory,
or even three.
Well,
I'm not,
in theory,
that's tough.
In theory, if you get to three with Atlanta, and Atlanta knows the player they want, the player the Grizzlies want is not the player they want, And so you can just extort a little bit of value to just flip two spots.
We've seen that a few times.
Something like that could happen. But they don't have the assets to move up, like, multiple picks within the top five. You know,
just look at the price from 3-1 last year. The Grizzlies can't come anywhere close to that.
It's not. I mean, I like Dylan Brooks, but this idea that gets you from 4-2 or 4, it just doesn't, right? Dylan Brooks in the 32. They're not moving up. They don't have the assets to move up. So I think you can just take that off the board. And so that leaves you what? You stay at 4, you move down, you move out, right? I'm not a believer in the moving out thing because I just don't know. I don't know if the 4 is going to get you an all-star quality player in their young prime, right? And if you're not getting an all-star quality player in their young prime, I'm not moving. I may not even move for that, but I'm not moving for less than that, right? I don't want a 31-year-old. I don't want a guy who is like a quality starter but not quite an all-star. And so, you know, I don't want Tobias Harris, right? And so I think I have to assume that cooler heads will ultimately prevail and they would not cash out on the 4th pick for 60 cents on the dollar, which I think is what you would do if you move out of it. And so it leaves you with move down or stay put. If you move down, I think this draft is strong through like 10 or 11 players or whatever. And so I think you could move down.
I think it drops off pretty dramatically after that, though.
Yeah,
I think there's a big middle
of the first round gets squishy.
Yeah.
But I think you could move down within the lottery, within the top 10, and still get like a really
good. So like
really,
a 12 and 13 Clippers for – how do you feel about that?
I would be more – it depends on who's still there at 12 and 13. But I would rather move down to 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and then get an asset with that.
So 7 and 22 from the Bulls.
Yeah, maybe. It depends on sort of who's there, right?
Right.
And so, but for the Grizzlies, I think if they do something like that, it's more likely to be, we'll move down a little bit, we'll still get, you know, this long-term player, long-term cornerstone player, and then we'll get something that'll help us right now. So I think they're more likely, like I threw out a fake trade on the blog thing of, could you move from 4 to, if Orlando wanted Bamba or whatever, could you move down a few spots and then, you know, you flip Ben McLemore for Jonathan Simmons, you still get a player who's comparable to what you would get it for, and you upgrade for this season to try to make the playoffs. I'm not advocating that. But to me, your trade down is something like that, where you still get a player within the lottery and you get an extra asset for the short term. But I think it all comes back to the most likely thing. It's also the thing that they probably should do is that is stay tight at
just
number
pick.
4.
Because just pick.
I like Bagley more than you. I like Bagley less than most people who are probably going to listen to this. But I'm a believer in the what I see as the top 4 players in this draft, which is Ayton, Doncic, Bagley, Jackson, not necessarily in that order. I like all 4 of those to different degrees. And I am content, if I'm the Grizzlies, to sit there at number 4 and take whichever of those 4 players is there, and I'll be happy with it.
I mean, I hope you're right, because to me that's the most logical thing to do is that. You have a very good position. You have the opportunity to add what could be a foundational player if all goes well. Again, you have to be patient. Anybody other than Doncic is going to require development. This is not a plug and play situation. You're not going to plug in Ayton. You're not going to plug in.
Yeah, but I don't think
Bagley.
Any of these 4 guys are long term. These guys are not Dragan Bender. Like, I think all of them will help you next season.
I think Jaren Jackson is going to, you're going to have to work with, and I love the guy.
He's not going to arrive fully formed. He's probably not going to start for you on opening night.
No, okay.
But I think he will be a rotation player for you next season.
I hope you're right. That one I'm a little worried about, and I love the guy. I think potentially he could be the best of all of them.
Right.
But he's going to require some actual work. You know, particularly on the defensive end for all these guys. That's not easy. And if you want to contend,
he's going to come off the bench and average 8-4, and people are going to be upset.
Exactly.
Marvin Bagley's averaging 15-8.
And then people are
going
to get mad. This is the part that frustrates me. You got to be patient. I worry that there's not enough patience going on. Now here's my nightmare scenario. Okay. Now tell me if this is plausible to you. The 4, along with Chandler Parsons and something else, you'd probably sweeten it. I don't know how that would work. 32, maybe.
Right.
The details don't really matter. The gist of it, for Andrew Wiggins. Quote-unquote, young. He's 23.
Yeah.
He's a star in the sense that he scores a lot of points.
Right.
I think we all know what school he went to, which is a very popular school among general managers of the Grizzlies. He's got $146 million left in his contract.
Yeah, I can't.
Which is even worse than Chandler Parsons by a long shot. I'm just saying, I can envision a scenario where they say, look, We need a scorer. We need somebody that can go alongside and play that position. He's, you know, a...
Oh, there's an argument. You can sell that, right? Yeah. I don't think you can sell it to me and you,
no.
But you can sell it.
Yeah.
You can sell it because we're getting off this bad asset in Parsons' contract.
Right.
We're getting off an unknown asset in the number four. Because everyone envisions a best-case scenario with draft picks, and oftentimes that's not the case. It could just be a total miss. It could be a player...
I mean, you mentioned Dragon Bender.
Right.
That same position.
Well, it could be a guy who everyone thinks is going to be good, who just is not, right?
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
It could be a miss. And you're getting a guy who is young, who is productive, and who plays the most important position in the league now in terms of a versatile wing. The problem is that he's just not that good.
I agree. Absolutely.
And the contract, he is paid like a superstar, and he is not even an all-star. You know, and I would not do that.
I wouldn't either. But I look around the league.
Well, the problem with doing any trade that involves that the four pick and the Parsons contract, obviously, is the Parsons contract thus severely undercuts the return on the four pick.
Exactly.
And to me, if this is essentially about the post Marc Gasol, post Mike Conley Grizzlies, I don't care about the Parsons contract because it's gone in 2 years. And it's gone by the time you're dealing with that down the line. And so I'm not sacrificing value 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now for what you get out of moving the Parsons contract in the next 2 years.
No, I hope that you're right about that. And I would agree. I mean, I think you use that asset. I mean, you look at Denver, that's probably going to have to use the 14th overall pick to get off of – you know, some significant money,
right?
Because they're, you know, $22 million into the luxury tax, and
yes,
the Grizzlies are not in that position.
Yeah, the Grizzlies have navigated themselves into a pretty bad spot, but
they're not that bad.
Not that, right.
And they need some future. You need to start working on the future. You need to start getting, to me, I just worry about throwing good money after bad and trying to chase something, because, you know, I think we may differ a little bit on this one. I don't think even in a best case scenario, this team is. I mean, maybe they sneak into the playoffs next year, but we're not talking about a team that's anywhere close to doing damage.
Okay. Here's where I'm at. I think I'm in a slightly different place than most people in terms of this big picture, where the Grizzlies are and where they should be headed. You have people who believe the we're back, baby, playoff time,
right.
And are really hungry and thirsty for that sixth seed, right? I am not those people. And you do have people, and you may be in this category, who are like, you're not going to make the playoffs. It's time to just blow this up and embrace your future, right? I am not there. I would be there, but I am not there because I think the practicality of the matter, I believe that they have steered themselves into a corner, and there is no easy and painless way out of that corner. And so my goal, if I'm sort of navigating the ship of state of the Grizzlies, is not the best path, which is hard to get. It is avoiding the worst path, avoiding the worst case scenario. And to me, the worst case scenario long term for your franchise is giving Boston a top five pick and a good draft. You know that you are going to give Boston a first round pick in a 3 year window. That window opens next summer and then it closes after 3 years. You know you will give them a first round pick within that 3 year window. If next year's draft is as bad as everyone says it is, as people think it's going to be one of the worst drafts, I want to give them – if you make the playoffs, great. But I'm talking about I want to give them a mid-late lottery pick in that draft and not a high lottery pick in a good draft after that.
Right.
And so I'm assuming pain on the front end. I'm just assuming pain. I'm trying to avoid the worst-case scenario. And so to me, it makes sense to try to be competitive enough next season – to get off of that obligation, but to do so in a way that doesn't undercut your long-term planning. And I know that, you know, your long-term in some ways would be better if you just traded Gasol, traded Conley, got assets, move forward. But I'm really worried about you getting cute with it and giving up a great pick. I want to get off that obligation in as painless a way as possible, even though any way is going to be painful. If they end up being... If they win 36 games and end up, you know, they're going to miss the playoffs and they're going to be slotted 9th or 10th going into the lottery, they don't get lucky in the lottery, and now you miss the playoffs and you give up your first-round pick, everyone's going to hate that, But to me, that's you got to take your medicine because it's going to be so much worse otherwise.
And that's where I am. I'm glad that you mentioned take your medicine because that's exactly the approach that this sounds like, and that's what it is really, is you have to take your medicine. I'm kind of, I would say, I'm closer to that philosophy than anything else. I'm definitely not a believer that this team is that close in the playoffs or that they're going to get right back in the
mix.
I
think it's possible, but
no one outside
of Memphis is going to predict the Grizzlies to be a playoff team.
No, and I mean, it's possible, but even if so, ultimately, we're long-term, you got to start thinking longer-term.
Right.
The short-term making the playoffs is great, but that doesn't really – you're trying to rebuild something else. So what you're saying about the medicine is apt. I would just say – two things. One, I think the ship has sailed on trading Mark.
Well, that's part of my rationale. You know, is I don't believe in the value you're going to get in return anyway.
There's nothing out there. There's no team that has – first of all, there's no space for – I mean, no one's going to trade in space. So you're not going to save yourself any money. No one views Mark, I think, as an especially positive asset at this stage on that contract, given his age and injury and everything else. Mark is a little bit of a different player than he was, you know, 3 years ago, and the game is different than it was, as you mentioned.
Right.
So that – Conley, same thing. Conley is a wonderful guy, great leader, et cetera. All those wonderful things are true. I love Mike. Great guy. That contract is big and is not good and is not viewed especially positively around the league. And you're not going to get a lot from a even in that situation, you get more than Mark, but you're not going to get anything that's worth mortgaging, future path, whatever you want to say, mortgaging this opportunity that you have to use this window. You're not going to get anything that's worth it. You're not getting future assets, I don't think, that are of major value for Mike Conley. So given those limitations, absolutely. You steer it as best you can. If you give up the ninth pick, then that sucks, and you wish you
it's
didn't.
Better than
didn't
giving
do
up
that.
The sixth pick the year after or the second pick the year after. That.
I mean, exactly. And you can't. It's done. You know what I mean? Like, it's over. The thing I think organizations really screw up in was they try to undo things that have already been done. It's done.
That's why I'm not eager. I mean, I'm happy to get off the Chandler Parsons contract, but I don't see that as sort of an operational goal this summer. We got to get off the Parsons contract.
I think in that case, it's more of a, it's the contract that fits financially with the deal, and it's in some way, it would help you to sell the prospect of the deal.
No, I think you're operating on sort of two tracks this summer. They should be operating on two tracks. One, what can we do to give us the best chance beyond the Conley-Gasol Grizzlies, and that is staying at four and taking that player. And then B, what can we do, and what other things can we do, you know, to help give us a foundation in place once we're able to fully turn to the future, which is, you know, these bad contracts are in the rear view, the pick obligations in the rear view, now we're really turning to the future. So what can we do now to set us up best for that path, even if we're not fully on it for another year or two?
Right.
And then secondarily, what can we do to have a competitive product on the floor this season that does not deter from the long-term goal, right? And so that's like, you know, hopefully they got lucky on Marshawn Brooks, right? That's I'm okay with using the mid-level or large portion of the mid-level on a veteran player if you spin well, because either it's going to help you maybe be good this year or maybe it turns into a trade asset, right? Like Tyreke Evans was not a trade asset on the contract he was on last year. But a similar Tyreke Evans or some other player on a 3-year MLE might be a trade asset, right?
Are you Tyreke Evans or Will Barton? If you can get them, either one, full mid-level, three, four years.
If you give me the same contract and I can actually get one, I would take Will Barton because he's younger, because there's less of an injury history. Frankly, because – I mean, he doesn't give you the ball-handling playmaking Tyreke does, but I think this team really has and he's not – I mean, he's sort of skinny to be a true three, but – I think you need players who can play some more in the three than in the backcourt. I would take Barton.
He's a little more of a complimentary piece. Yeah, he doesn't take over the...
I think Barton is more likely to be a trade asset in year two of a 3-year MLE than Evans is, right? Because of the age and the injury stuff. If you could... I'm not convinced you can get that. You can get him on that.
I'm not either, but I'm saying hypothetically, that's one thing that people are starting to kick around already
idea. We'll get into that in the summer, but you look around, what's the market going to be for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? What's the market going to be for Avery Bradley? I assume it's more than MLE, but they're...
Marcus Smart?
Yeah, well, I think Boston would match MLE, but...
You say they got a lot of, there's a lot of issues out there
and
for them.
And so, I think they should use that free agency bucket that they have, whether that's a full MLE or it may be they only use, you know, a portion of it.
Right.
They should use that to find a player who will help them next season, but also who could have potential trade value down the line. They should be looking at that.
Okay, a couple things real quick because I know we got to run. Dylan Brooks, how good is he? Are we talking like 3 years' time? Is he a starter? Is he a role player? Is he a sixth man for a good, on a good team? How good is Dylan Brooks?
I think it's likely he's a role player on a good team. He's a sixth, seventh man on a good team. I just think he's a little bit of a tweener as a starter. Like, he's not quite big enough. And I know position, we're getting more positionless, but I still feel like he's not quite enough of a ball handler playmaker to be like your secondary ball handler in your starting lineup, which you want somebody on the wing to be. He's not quite big enough, long enough really to defend, you know, the more athletic threes in the league. And so I think his best position is the one he was in right out of the gate this year, where he was like an energy guy, bucket getter off the bench. I think that's likely his long-term scenario. I think he'll be a starter for this team next season. But I think with him, I think we know the athletic limitations and the defensive limitations. I think that's baked in. We know he's a guy who plays hard, who plays smart, good intangibles. I think that's baked in. I think the pivot point with him is going to be the outside shooting. Is he going to be a legitimate 40% three-point shooter in the NBA? And if so, then like that really raises the ceiling on what he can be. And I think that's sort of going to determine his upside. Where are you at?
I'm in that same kind of boat. I think he's a solid role player with a lot of the intangibles that you like. He's a guy that you can absolutely feel very confident in plugging in and letting it, he will run your stuff. He'll right. do the things he needs to do defensively. He's not going to be the most athletic guy. He's going to get beat a few times. He's probably going to be inconsistent enough to keep him out of the starting lineup for a good team. But
right.
but it, you can see guys like that play in these playoff series. Like that's a guy yeah. that's played a lot of minutes. You need 4 or 5 of those guys on your team.
It feels like if he is a starter, he's always a placeholder
yeah.
while you're looking for something
exactly.
better.
Yeah, yeah.
But he also feels like the kind of guy who like just finds his way into the game and you look up and, you know, the fourth quarter of a playoff
Absolutely.
Series and he's on the floor for you whether he's a starter or not, right?
Yeah, you need those types of guys, and it's like
Andrew Harrison's kind of like that at a lower level, right?
Absolutely.
It always feels like he's a placeholder waiting for something better, but you look up and he's always there, you know, he's always around.
Again, watching like Shimmy Ojeleye play, you know, minutes for Boston in playoff series against good teams, and he's out there, and again, he's right. you wouldn't have said like before the second round guy out of SMU, but he's a functional guy. I think people have gone a little crazy. I didn't think Dylan Brooks was like, you know, robbed of an all rookie second team spot or whatever, but he's a good player and I like that. Of the bigs that the Grizzlies have, the young bigs, who's going to be anything?
I am not fully sold on any of them. I'm not fully out either. I think with Deontay Davis, people got too high on him too soon, and as a consequence of that, got sort of too low.
I'm almost out on him, though. I got to tell you, I'll be honest with you. I'm like one thing away from being out on Deontay.
He is so young still, and so raw, not just physically, but you know, in terms of mental approach to the game. And the range of what he needs to do is so narrow as a shot blocker, rebounder, rim runner. I think there's potential there for him to be, not a starter, but like a useful player in
for
that
sure.
sort of narrow role. And so I am not convinced. It's funny, him and
he
Ivan
Rabb.
He could
be a completely destitute man's Clint Capella.
Right, right, right.
But he's not even that yet.
He and Ivan Rabb are sort of opposite sides of the coin because Rabb has a better, more skilled fundamentally in terms of footwork in his hands and certainly has better court sense. But he is just so limited physically to me.
Agreed.
And so I am not – I think it's gotten to the point where everyone assumes like Rabb ahead of Davis, and I'm not sold on either of them, but I don't think it's not out of the question to me that Davis ultimately is a better player than Rabb. I'm probably higher on both of them than I am on Martin. I just don't
see it with
Jerome Martin as an NBA player.
The ship has sailed to me with him.
I think he helped himself last season in a lot of ways, but it just doesn't fit for me on a good team in terms of
age
his role.
Is already, I mean, he's yeah. well past where you would want him to be in terms of, you know, if he was doing this and he's 20, okay, but he's 24, he'll be 25.
But if the Grizzlies come out of this draft with Jackson or Bagley, like I don't know if you have the developmental space, unless, you know, maybe they trade JaMychal Green, but let's assume you don't for a second. I don't know if there's the developmental space for, set aside Martin too, but like Davis and Rabb.
Yeah, absolutely.
Point,
yeah,
right?
You're gonna have to pick. You're gonna
but
have to
at
pick.
The same time, like they don't have trade value either. And I don't think I'm not out enough on them that you're just like cutting a guy to free up a roster spot, because that feels like the same old, like, cut bait too early, you know, sell
low. Wade Baldwin, Rade Zagorats right. approach. That is not – I would agree, but I think you may end up being in a situation where that's their only alternative, unless there's something else that comes up where they can, you know, trade, like – you know, when they got rid of Troy Daniels to try to maneuver around financially to try
well,
to... You know,
that gets into another realm of stuff they need to stop doing,
yeah, they got,
right?
They have to stop. That's
they have to stop
example.
Giving up assets for those kind of maneuvers, especially when it was a maneuver... That was a maneuver they shouldn't have made to begin with,
no, they
right?
didn't need to make it, and ultimately, it just... It is a long... It goes all the way back to, you know, getting rid of Wayne Ellington and Maurice Spates, who are very useful players, in an attempt to sort of give yourself more maneuverability for a Rudy right. Gay trade that didn't end up needing it. And Ellington has gone on to be a very productive shooter, which God knows you need enough of those. And Spates has won a title with the Warriors and others. So I'm with you there. So last thing then, just big board, you're the Chris Arrington big board. Like, give me where you're at right now.
I have been, and I know we're not on the same page with this, but I've been consistent all season. I think DeAndre Ayton's the best player in the draft. And I think there are two schools of criticism on Ayton, one of which I think is legitimate, and I share some concern, and one of which I don't. The idea of the league is shifting away from traditional bigs, he's a traditional big, that does concern me some. The stuff about he doesn't play hard, he doesn't have a motor. He's, you know, he only put up numbers because he was bigger than everyone in college. He's not really that skilled. He is awesome. I'm sorry. I watched him play like 12 times last year.
Yeah, he's great.
In terms of size, athleticism, and skill relative to size and athleticism, in terms of his footwork, being able to use both hands, he is an awesome traditional center.
You know, the funny thing actually about him to me is my knock on him going back and watching, you know, all the video on him is I don't think he's actually physical enough. You know, that he's almost too skill-based. You know, when he sets screens, he wants to slip every screen.
He doesn't
want to make the full contact. When he sets in the post, he doesn't really get that big ass and knock somebody out of the way. He kind of glides in there, and he can get away with that because he can face up. He has that little nice nifty jumper.
He's pretty good at using his hips, using his elbows. I like that he can shoot with both hands.
Oh, no, I think there's a world that it's actually it's in his favor. I'm saying this because there's a world of unlockable potential if he uses that physicality. I mean, he's going to be a monster. If he sets and he seals and then uses the skill that he's already got in the post, wonderful. Again, my limitation is more on the first thing, which what's that going to get you now?
And part of maybe is I'm yearning for an older NBA.
But you're an old school guy. You love that stuff.
I think the league has become too three-point dependent and too samey style-wise. I don't think it's good for the league. I like variety both in terms of players, in terms of styles. I don't want to watch games where both teams are shooting 43s. I like to see a little stylistic variety in the game. And so I do sort of yearn for that a little bit. But I think Ayton is the most talented.
So Ayton's your guy.
I think he's the most talented player in the draft, full stop.
Ayton's your guy.
After that, I agree with what seems to be the consensus that the next tier is Doncic, Bagley, Jackson in some order. Michael Porter terrifies me. He may be as good as those guys, but I would not touch him at number four.
No.
I'm not even considering anyone else. I'm looking at those three players, and since the Grizzlies are four, I'm just taking whoever's left. I would probably go Doncic too, because of the positional issue, and because he is the kind of player who is now most important in the NBA. And I sort of believe I'm worried about his speed, because when I watch the clips, I do think he looks kind of slow and kind of heavy. But I'm sort of persuaded by the idea that he's sort of been running to the ground in terms of the use over there, and that if you get him into the NBA system where he's really working with trainers and working on his body and then sort of getting some rest, that you could see a little bit of different player. I'd probably take Doncic too. Bagley and Jackson, I'm very torn. I think Jackson has higher upside. Jackson is my favorite player in the draft. Ayton, I think, is the best. Jackson is my favorite. And so I would really, 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 really want to take Jaren Jackson over Bagley. I think I would chicken out and take Bagley at the end of the day. I think people have undersold how much better Bagley can still be. The Bagley critics have undersold that.
I think I believe in his outside shooting
about as much as I believe in Jaren Jackson in terms of improvement.
But here's the thing. This is where I would say the statistics would doubt that. Because to me, Bagley is more of an act of faith because he shoots 65% from the foul line.
Yes.
Jackson shoots 80% from the foul line.
Yes.
The list of guys who have a block rate of 10% or higher.
Right.
And shoot 75% or better from the foul line, and shoot as many threes as Jackson has. You're talking Miles Turner,
right?
Kat, Karl Anthony Towns, and him.
Right.
That's your comps, pretty much, in terms of guys that have gone on to the NBA. And, you know, you have other guys like small school guys that weren't really, but in terms of guys that were productive, like major college guys, that's who you're talking about. I'm not saying he's going to be either one of those, but there is a nice history with the skill set that he provides. Yeah. And his defensive upside,
I'm worried about,
is tremendous.
Yeah, I feel like
I'm not saying Bagley. Bagley's a great. I knock Bagley a lot. Just in people, I think he's going to be a really productive guy. I think he's going to put up numbers, no problem.
Well, I think he's going to be an Amari Stoudemire type, but I think that he will be more of an outside shooter and more of a playmaker, because I think there will be more emphasis on that at a younger age.
I just see Jabari Parker. I see Jabari Parker like that's like you, yeah, like he's super, he, like Jabari Parker, you watch him play some and you're like, my God, this guy,
right.
You know, when he's healthy, he can hit shots. He can sometimes hit outside shots. He can go inside. He can really beast. He gets out there. But then you watch the units that he's out there with, and they struggle defensively big time.
Right.
And I think that you're going to see the same thing with him. I hope I'm wrong, but that's the case.
I think the question with Bagley defensively is how much better can he get on the perimeter? Because
yeah.
I don't think – everyone has said he has to be a center, because there's a law now that if you're 6'10", you have to be a center in the NBA. I think Bagley should be a four. It's a primary position. I believe in him. I don't believe in him defensively at all. But to the degree that I'm going to like take a leap of faith, I believe in it more developing perimeter skills defensively than I do – protect the rim center skills, because I don't think that's coming with
him. I mean, yeah, and as we say goodbye, I mean, the Grizzlies have had great success with a offensive-minded four who played very well back to the basket alongside
a
defensive-minded five. I mean, that's there are worse ways to go, for sure. First of all, thank you again for all the time. Appreciate it. Thank you for all the fun stuff that we've had. I mean, you've really been a great boon to the Grizzlies community, and with all the writing, everything else has been terrific. And then congratulations, too, on the new gig. And I know you guys are going to be putting some really fun stuff out there, and I'm encouraged by it, and I think it's pretty cool. So well done.
Well, I'm hopeful. We'll see what happens.
Thank you again. That's Chris Harrington, our buddy, and we'll get in. You'll come back on, right? I mean, for the draft, we're gonna do some more of this.
I got nothing to do. I'm a vagabond with no home this summer.